We hope that you've been nice and you get rewarded accordingly. It's a very Merry Christmas from the Football Site Podcast Friday show. I am your host, Jack Quigley. With me, as he always is, our man on the ground in Melbourne is my good friend Christian Leyland. Welcome back, Christian.
Thank you, Jack. I just want to say, I remember back in our first few podcasts where we used to actually have respectable music and we used to dance in the studio as we were coming in, but we just seem to get lower and lower and lower, and today I was almost cringing listening to our opening theme music.
Yeah, well, see, the theme is everyone hates going to the supermarkets around Christmas because they just play non-stop carols and it gets on everyone's nerves, and it kind of got me back to last year when we had an email complaining about the official A-League song they play before kickoff, so we chose that as our intro music. So we really like to piss off the listener as early as possible on this show. I find that works for us. How are you, mate, by the way?
Oh, I'm quite well, thank you. Yourself?
I am good as well. And, of course, I'm wishing you a Merry Christmas because I probably won't talk to you until after the big 25th of Jesus' birthday. And a very happy Christmas to our listeners. As I said, we have got a fair bit of stuff to get through today that is going to be A-League related. We have got previews for the week to come, the weekend to come. We should also point out that there is a game going on as we speak. So this is the Friday show, but due to certain time constraints, we are recording on a Thursday evening. So if something massive happened in the Sydney FC versus Adelaide game, other than the two goals we've had in the first half so far that I can see on my monitor, and we failed to talk about it on the Friday show, and you think we should have, that's why. That is why. Let's jump headfirst into it. First of all, thanking SCU, Southern Cross University, for once again generously providing the recording studios for us to take to the microphones. The big news is that Rinny is cooling his jets elsewhere. He's no longer in employment by Adelaide United. Your thoughts, mate?
Well, he had to go. That's kind of first and foremost. He was a bad choice. He was. We talked about him on the show yesterday. I told you how much I liked him, how much I thought his tactical awareness was the best in the league, and how I think Adelaide should have kept hold of him. Of course, I'm being sarcastic, but he needed to go because he was the biggest disappointment in all of the coaches in the A-League. Lots was expected of him, a lot was expected of him, and he didn't deliver. Very tactically naive, he had one plan, didn't have a plan B, and he got shown out against everyone. So everyone knew eventually it was coming. But the biggest surprise of them all was, of course, his replacement with John Cosmina. It was a bit of the, sorry, what factor coming in. It was almost as if we expected never to see him again in the league.
It was a back to the future moment, wasn't it? And it's an interesting debate. I mean, you've come out and said on record in the past that you feel you will never judge a coach until he's had a full season in charge. Cullen doesn't really fall into that criteria for you?
Oh, well, he did. He had a full season last season, didn't he?
Yeah, was it his squad, though, is what I'm sort of saying. I mean, did he really... I think the start of this season onwards was when he kind of assembled his tools. But what, you just go 12 months calendar year from when they take over? Is that how long...
Well, not particularly. I normally go, if he comes in half of the season, he gets at half and then his own full season. But it's a strange one because he's done worse with his own squad than he did with the old squad. And it's because his game plan relies solely on star players. So he had Matthew Lecky and he had Flores, and he relied on those two players to create all the goals, quite basically. And when those two were injured, I can't remember winning a single game when those two players didn't play. In fact, I remember them losing a match 4-0 when they had an extra man advantage, with three of those goals coming from after the opposition had a player sent off. Of course, it was Brisbane Roar. That was early on in the piece. And it was from that moment then you saw how reliant he was on star players. And he tried to bring in the star players in with Slory, but he obviously didn't work. And because his star player didn't work, then as a coach he didn't work, and the team fell to pieces because he relies on those star factor. He doesn't rely on tactics because he doesn't have any.
Fairly succinct there. What about his replacement, Cozzy, who, as you sort of pointed out to me before we start recording, is still yet to obtain, remarkably, for a bloke who keeps getting employed as one of the top coaches in Australia. Is what Adelaide needs right now an injection of passion, or do they need an injection of tactical nous?
It's a bit of a no-brainer. They need tactical nous. It's what they've been lacking. See, Cossie came in his first press interview. He says he's going to establish a warrior-like mentality, and he's going to try to make them passionate. Now, that's all well and good 30 years ago, before we had any idea of, you know, how we're supposed to play football. Well, that's a bit unfair on 30 years ago, to be honest with you. It's an old-school mentality, and it's an incorrect mentality, and it's one that'll do nobody no favours. The club will go backwards, unless he's just, you know, sprouting hyperbole and doesn't actually believe what he's saying. It cannot be a good thing. Sure, a passion might win you the odd game here and there, especially early in the tenor, but there's no way that a team relying solely on passion and a warrior-like mentality is going to be anywhere near successful. I mean, I think Craig Foster said it best, that, you know, every professional football player should be passionate. You know, that the motivation should not be a factor. And it's proven. We've got the two coaches who have the pro licences, as in Ange Postecoglou and Graham Arnold, the two highest qualified coaches ever in Australian domestic football, and they're playing the two best styles of football and have the best results of Australian domestic football history. And, you know, that is not a fluke. It's not a coinkydink. There's a reason for that. You know, they've been educated. They know exactly what they have to do tactically, and they've done a diplom, you know. Which, of course, he doesn't even have an A license. I mean, like, yes, it's hard to get an A license when you're coming from the beginning, but as an ex-player, he does get fast-tracked to the licences if he wants to. He's been out of football for, what, two seasons? What has he been doing? Why has he got his A license? And if he's going to rely on what he was teaching Sydney FC and Adelaide in the previous years, then they're going to get the wooden spoon, because my friend, is outdated.
Yeah, well, it's the interesting point that you make, what's he been doing. He hasn't sort of been heard of or seen since, so he's not made sort of noises that he would like to get back into management. And had he been, you would certainly hope, you know, if he's been hoping to get back into management, he would have got that accreditation under his belt. It's strange to think that he could be away for so long, and that just makes you a bit worried that if he was a bit outdated back when he was last coaching, how outdated is he going to be now if he tries to just come in and play the Cosmina way?
Well, that's probably, he is going to be outdated, and it's going to be a blight in the league. You know, the rules state that a coach coming into a club has to have an A license, and in a couple of years, that rule's going to change to having a pro license. Now, I'm not sure how they can actually give him the job if he doesn't satisfy the criteria, and I'm not sure how the FFA can allow it. And I've had my attack on Cosmina, and I'm done with that to a certain extent. But now, the next question is the FFA. Why haven't they stood in and upheld the rules that they put in place for a very good reason? It's strange, because it's going to set a precedent if they don't do it, because suddenly any club can say, oh, we've decided we don't want to follow those rules, and we can see you're not going to do anything about it, so we're just going to hire another rubbish manager, and the standard of this league is not going to improve. And that, to me, is the problem.
Well, it's interesting, the word precedent that you said there, because, I mean, the FFA has kind of set a precedent in the past when we thought it would be great if Mark Bosnich took control of just one match, if you remember, just sort of as a showpiece event, as a caretaker manager, and FFA jumped all over it and said, no, he can't do it, he's not accredited, and yet they're willing for someone to get a full-time job without the proper accreditation.
Yeah, no, it's pretty nuts. Yeah, with the Mark Bosnich incident, it's a little bit different because they registered him as a trainer, and trainers aren't allowed on the bench during the game. But like you said, if they try to stop Bosnich from doing one single match, which would have probably doubled the crowd because it was a nothing game, they're letting, you know, let's be honest, a very underqualified coach take the reins as head coach full time. And I haven't heard a whisper from them on the topic at all. It's almost outrageous. Like I actually can't believe it's being allowed to happen.
How drastic a fall do you think it will be for Adelaide? Obviously, they can't fall too far before they hit the bottom of the ladder. It's only Gold Coast propping them up. In your eyes, are you now tipping Adelaide for a wooden spoon?
Look, in saying this, it is hard to tell, because with a new coach comes a bit of a... Yeah, the next couple of games are going to be all hurly-burly, players trying to impress, etc., etc. So they may string together a few wins. So I can't guarantee a wooden spoon, but what I can guarantee is that they're not going to be a successful side. You know, even if there is a short-term gain in this, it's going to be very short-term. And the foresight of the club to put this in, this coach in, is not good at all. I mean, yep, they will come close to wooden spoon, quite possibly. But in saying that, you know, it's a tough one because, you know, you never know. In football, you can beat anyone on the day. So it could come down to that. But long term,
it's more so on the day, though, not every week of the season.
That's true. Yeah, there's no way they're going to win the comp. They're not even going to come close to winning the comp. They're not going to play a good style of football, and none of the players are going to become markedly improved players and move on to bigger things because of this appointment.
That's the thing. If you're not going to win the comp, aren't you just treading water? You're wasting time.
Well, that's right. But it's strange because they said, you know, we've given him the contract to the end of the ACL season, you know, just to see out, you know, kind of make sure the club has someone there. But I'm thinking, if you take Brisbane Roar for an example, their club was in disaster mode. They put in Ange Postecoglou. They said, don't worry about this season, mate, but build for next season. Surely that's something Adelaide should have done. Put in a coach who is going to be there for the long term, who's going to be, you know, a benefit to the club, and say to him, this season, don't worry so much. Build next season, and we'll, you know, we'll just try to work this club bigger next season. It's astounding.
I've always not been a fan of short-term coaches and making it known that a coach is there short-term because I find it very hard for the coach to then take control of a dressing room if players know they've only got to sit around for another few months and he might be on his way.
Exactly. It's a strange one. It's something you see a lot more often in the NRL because you have coaches who will sign contracts with clubs next year at the start of the previous season, and that always weirds me out, sort of going, how can you coach a club where every single person in the country knows you're not going to be there next year? And there was even one example where two clubs actually swapped coaches at the end of the season, and none of those clubs did very well. And the general rule of thumb is that if you know the coach isn't going to be there, if it's short term, the club's not going to be that successful. The only real one differing from that, was that Ewan McKenzie with the Waratahs, they made the grand final and then he got kicked out. So,
yeah.
But it's a strange situation, and there's some people on Twitter and around the football journalism circles, and they're going, is it really a big deal? It's only a piece of paper, and you know, an accreditation doesn't make you a great coach. And they have a point, you know, accreditation doesn't make you a great coach, but when you look at it that way, every great coach has accreditation. So accreditation doesn't guarantee you success, it does guarantee improvement. And just, look, the one big thing with coaching is that Mourinho said this, Ferguson said it, Wayne Bennett said it in the rugby league. Basically, every great coach has said this, that as a coach, you are constantly learning. Every day you're learning something new because, you know, the game evolves. You have to learn new tactics. You have to adjust. You have to be willing to throw out your old systems in a second and adopt a totally new system. You have to be constantly learning. Now, Cozzie, in the one act of not being willing to upgrade his B license to an A license, has shown that he has no interest at all in learning something new.
Indeed. Well surmised. Well surmised. We would love to hear your thoughts on it. If you are an Adelaide fan or just an A-League fan in general who has strong thoughts on the topic, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us. Email us info@thefootballsack.com or join the Facebook group and write on the Facebook wall or reach us directly in 150 characters or less on Twitter @thefootballsack. The FFA yesterday had a birthday. Ever since they were founded and set up by John O'Neill and co just a few years ago, they turned 100 yesterday. What a proud day that must have been for them, Christian.
Must have been a proud day. I must imagine the celebrations must have been endless, Jack.
Oh, look, 100 years old, you don't turn 100 every day, and the fact that FFA forgot makes it all the more astounding.
It was a bit kind of incredible. For example, when we saw in the AFL turned 100, huge celebrations. NRL turned 100, huge celebrations. Do you think that'd be your kind of milestone mark as a sport? But we didn't have a whimper from them, you know. And the fact, you know, most of the congratulations just came from random fans on Twitter saying, "Oh, look, happy birthday, happy 100th birthday, football in Australia. It was a bit of a premier, Jack.
Exactly. You know, what we're referring to is obviously the establishment of a governing body of football in Australia, and you know, which later became Soccer Australia and then Football Federation Australia. It shows to me there is still a missing link there between the old football communities and the new, and you know, those links need to be joined if we're to see those old football fans, because there's hundreds and thousands of them out there. Steve Hapgood said to me when he was on this show a month ago that, you know, there would have to be hundreds of thousands of football fans in Sydney. The only problem is there's only about 13,000 Sydney FC fans. So still, that shows to me there's a lot more work to be done for FFA there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still definitely, you know, the gap needs to be bridged between, you know, hyphen out of brackets, old soccer and new football. And look, to be honest, it goes both ways. You know, it's so hard because both parties don't really want to be united, and they need to be united for the good of the sport. You know, the old soccer, I say that hesitantly just because lack of a better term, but the old soccer fans, they don't want to be involved in new football. You know, they want to be the forefront of football, but they don't want to be the forefront with the current people who are running it. And the people who are running it, that, you know, they've tried to put some measures in, but not they haven't exactly invited old soccer to come and join the party equally. The two parties need to be united for football in Australia to be as strong as it possibly can be. And for the foreseeable future, I have no answer as to how it can happen, because both parties, as much as they do want to be together, they don't. You know, and it's especially with our coverage of the state leagues, I can see how, you know, it's such a big divide, it's almost incomprehensible, and it's such a sad fact to see there's so many passionate fans out there but who just refuse to get involved with the current setup. And in saying that, the current setup, you know, they do kind of try to get them involved, but it's obviously not enough and not working. It's two mindsets which needs to be changed. There needs to be some sort of middle ground there, and they both need to be flexible about it. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening until maybe the 200th anniversary.
Yes.
But it's when we'll forget about that one too. And it's a sad fact of Australian football is that everyone has their territory and they guard it and they don't want to unite their territory with the next person. And it's, I honestly have no answer for it. You know, give me a tactical problem on the field, I'll sort it out in a second. But this is something which is, people have been trying to fix for years and years and years with no success. And unfortunately, off the top of my head, I don't have an answer.
Maybe Ben Buckley should start replying to emails. That'd be a good start.
Oh my God, yes.
Interesting to note, Jesse Fink put on Twitter, you know, well-known journalist and football writer, Jesse Fink was complaining on Twitter that he received an email from the FFA asking to set up a meeting. He said, sure, what time suits you? And he didn't get a reply. So a week later, he replied again. And it's now been 12 months since he got sent that last email. And I just said to him, mate, join the queue, because that's exactly the same as us.
Yeah, no, he went on to Twitter there and he had a bit of an outrage at the FFA, and I think a lot of journalists were sending in their stories to the FFA, and he was just the face of it, and he just started saying, these are the problems that the Australian media's had with it, blah, 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 blah. The list went on, and, you know, I know the FFA, they're trying hard, and, you know, they're doing a lot for the game, but it's just sometimes you think there is a lot more they could be doing as well. So it's the whole establishment thing. Everyone thinks they can do a better job, and you know, some cases they can, some cases they can't. But there are some basics that need to be done right, and that's, you know, and that includes, you know, replying to emails or making the media feel completely comfortable. So yeah, we'll to go back to my old saying, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. More cutting edge insight once again. Let's preview the weekend's rounds, mate. It's half time between Sydney FC and Adelaide United. They are, or as Christian Leyland would like to call it, Sydney FC versus Neanderthals tactics. It's 1-1. Wellington against the Jets. The Jets have been had a good start to the season. They're slightly going off the boil a little bit just lately.
They did. They've always had an atrocious away record this year, but their home record until recently has been quite immaculate. Unfortunately, it's got to the Phoenix of two seasons ago almost. But they have gone off the rails a bit with the loss to Sydney the other week, plus other results. And this is a match that they'll really need to kind of capitalise on and get 3 points if they want to re-establish themselves as premiership threats and save Jack Quigley from the terrible punishment after predicting they would finish in the top three.
That's right. Interesting position because, I mean, the Jets at the moment, they're 4 points off the bottom of the league. They're also 5 points off being third. So, you know, these next bunch of games, especially against the Phoenix, who are 2 points ahead of them on the ladder in sixth, you know, these are crucial games, and they can really set them up for a post-Christmas New Year run if they get them right.
That's right, and that's the beauty of this league. Is, you know, there's only 10 teams. There is actually a lot of games now, but it's such a tight league that a run of three games, whether it be three draws, three wins, three losses, or a combination, can actually change the entire outlook of how you're going. I mean, early in the year, the Melbourne Victory fans were calling for Memo Durakovic's blood, and they finally got a win, and suddenly they're second. And, you know, it's Christ the club in second. It's how often do you get that sort of thing? So, look, Wellington do not play good football. They do what it takes to get a draw or a win sometimes. I can see the Jets coming there and getting 3 points, but it's going to be very hard work, and they're actually going to have to do things exactly right and possibly even get a little bit of luck along the way.
Now, we are backing up after a weekend of 100% result predictions from what we predicted last week, which is good for us because it's the first in a year and a half of podcasts, so we thought that deserved a mention. Let's roll into predictions for this week. I'm going to first say prediction for second half of this Sydney FC Adelaide game.
To be honest, it's a bit hard because I haven't seen the game. I don't know the tone of it, but I'm going to say Sydney's going to come back with a win.
I'm going to say that too. I think they'll come home strong. Wellington against the Jets, your thoughts?
I said before, I think Jets will come over the 3 points, but it will not be easy and it may take a bit of luck.
I see a draw in as a result. In Wellington, Friday night, it's a smorgasbord of football. The middle game, sandwiched right in the middle, is the biggest of the three. It's the Melbourne Derby. As you know, using your position in Melbourne, what's the buzz like down there? It is a sellout.
It's a sellout. The buzz is amazing. Even non-football people are talking about it. And to me, that is music to my ears.
Well, it's great because, I mean, Melbourne Heart are ahead of the Victory going into this derby, and after a decent chunk of the season too, not just a few early results. So, you know, this is a forker of a game, I think.
Absolutely, Heart are coming in, I think, from four wins from their last five, which is probably one of the best runs in their history so far. Victory coming off a strong win last week, although probably a run of a bit of unstable form. Now, both teams always lift for this occasion, and in a sold-out Amy Park, it's going to be impossible not to enjoy, no matter how dour or exciting the game's going to be.
I'm going to go for the Heart to win. What are your thoughts?
To me, I'm leaning towards a draw here. Heart are in good form, but Victory not going to want to lose it. It is a Heart home game, but I can guarantee you at least two-thirds of the stadium is going to be Victory. It's one of these games where I'm just looking forward to it. This is going to be my first Melbourne derby. It's going to be in a packed-out Amy Park. I don't care what the result is. I'm just happy to be there, but I'm going to go with a draw.
Okay. Final game of the night. Another interesting one because, I mean, the Central Coast Mariners are just conquering all before them at the moment. They do look pretty unstoppable as a juggernaut. They just look so hard to beat, and they just keep managing to win just by swatting teams aside. They go on a pretty long road trip over to the West to a Perth team that really has to get their house in order, or their season could pretty soon.
That's right. They had exactly like last season. They had a strong start, a reasonably strong start, and they're just falling away. And it's so strange with Perth. They can turn up and they can beat the best team in the league, and the next week they'll have nothing to show at all. And it's just, that's the worrying part, is that even if they do get a couple wins and make it to finals, they just don't have the consistency to have a tilt at the title. Whereas Central Coast Mariners, they are Mr. Consistency. They're 11 Mr. Consistency. So it's such an incredible team. It's a well-oiled engine, and I just love watching the Mariners play. Brisbane, tactically, are very good, but in a way, kind of similar to Adelaide, is that they're very, you know what's going to happen with Brisbane, but with Central Coast, they're so versatile. Their tactics can change within a game, let alone game to game, and more often than not, even as a Brisbane Roar fan, the Central Coast Mariners match is a game I look to watch the most, just because I'd like to see how they come out, what they're going to do, and how they're going to break down their opposition, which is just what they're really good at. And it's because of that consistency, because of that tactical awareness that Graham Arnold has, I cannot see anything but a Central Coast Mariners win in this fixture.
Yeah, for me too, to be honest. And you know, it's a shame. I'd love to see Perth get their house in order. I tipped them on the Backpage Football, That Was a Goal Football Sack podcast at the start of the year. And I said, look, if Perth can secure themselves a home final to kick off their final series, you know, they would be very tough to beat. But of course, that is depending on Perth being a winning unit week in, week out to get themselves to the top of the table, to get themselves a home final, which would then make them at home, you know, a very, very tough proposition. It's just not worked out that way. So I'm going to go Central Coast Mariners to win away. A final match of the round. It's the Boxing Day fixture, and it's going to be a strange one. I'll be at this one. So will the Football Sacks editor, Matt Greenlaw. We'll be meeting up there. I believe, did you say Melanie was going as well?
Quite possibly. I think she'll be doing the match report. She'll be going to check out the media facilities there, as I have told her that they are the best in the league, which is a statement I actually agree with.
Well, there you go. So the Gold Coast United take on the Brisbane Roar. It's going to be a strange game because you know, we're going to have Skill Park with people in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very similar to the hard home derbies, where the Gold Coast home derby is actually going to be taxed more with away fans. It's going to be the biggest crowd of the year. And, okay, I'm not going to lie, I had a look at the advertisement for it on the Gold Coast United website, and the ticketing slogan was, "Experience an atmosphere like no other and buy tickets to the Gold Coast United versus the Brisbane."
Well, see, the thing is, they don't need to say that because week in, week out, they can claim to have an experience like no other in the league, because every other team in the league gets fans. So that they have an experience unlike, you know, and away fans would go to Gold Coast games and go, this is unreal, this is like no other. It's totally silent in here. I think the Roar, still question marks about Thomas Broish's fitness. That's worrying for Brisbane, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a tough one. They will want Broish back, but in the same way, if they don't get Broish, they will be chopping and prove they can win their star man. So it's going to be a tough game for the Gold Coast. They could hold on for a draw with last year. They helped Brisbane to two draws and probably should have grabbed one of the wins. But again, it's Brisbane Roar. Even though they've lost four in a row, you just think they're going to be too strong. You know, unless they're playing the Mariners, you'd almost tip them to beat any other team, even on a four-match losing streak.
For me, it's a little bit interesting. I think the Roar minus Broish equals not very good team thing kind of keeps gaining momentum as the weeks go by. I think if Broish doesn't play, the Roar won't take 3 points. I think if he does, they will. I'm gonna go a draw in this one.
So did you want to throw out a little loophole that if Broish changes, your prediction changes?
Yeah, it's a clause in my contract. That if Broish plays, I'm allowed to put the house on him at late notice. There is another clause that if Saeed Mohammed Adnan plays, I'm allowed to put all my money on the Gold Coast to win.
You're not a fan, AJ.
I was not impressed, to say the least, by his first couple of games, I have to say. I mean, you're the Brisbane Roar fan, and you're going to say give the guy time. I just reckon he just looks really, really, really poor as a footballer.
It's strange. I personally believe that defensively he reads the game all right. You know, he's not a bad reader of the game. But what gets me is that he is a top-line footballer who has played many, many international caps, and he averages about one goal every three games in both international and club football, and he does not have a left foot. Every single touch is right with his right boot, and he will go out of his way to get his body shape incorrect just so he can get a ball on the right foot. And as a top line footballer, that is not acceptable, and it's not good enough, you know, as a team to accept. And it's really, really strange for me that Ange Postecoglou would rely on a player who is so technically inferior to many other players.
Interesting. I just think this will be his one and only season in the A-League. I don't think they'll hold on to him, and I don't think anyone else will pick him up. Right, so your prediction was Raw, correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's move on. We got a little bit of housekeeping to take care of before we wrap up the show. We should mention, direct you towards the website, thefootballsack.com, the Football Fans Down Under Awards Night that was such a fantastic success last year. Of course, we scooped Football Podcast of the Year, and we're still incredibly thankful to everybody who voted, and we would love to meet everybody who voted for us and thank them personally. So if you did vote and you ever see me, please come up and I'll shake your hand. So nominations for this year's awards open in January, so keep your eyes peeled for that, and keep going to the Football Fans Down Under site. Fantastic organization, those guys, run by Lee down there. Turning to our site, thefootballsack.com, there is a competition going on with Pele Sports, which is just launched here in Australia. It's a competition and a half, this one. To get a full rundown, go to the site and check it out. There's a competition that will run on Twitter and on Facebook, but some of the gear you can win is pretty insane. You've got about $400 worth of gear to get your hands on, including a pretty nifty set of boots, to say the least.
Yeah, well, there's actually $600 worth of gear to win, because one pack is worth $400 and one pack's worth $200.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, they're basically just the old Nomis boots, so they are currently the best boots in the world you can win. And we've got a pair of football outdoor boots and a pair of futsal boots, both top of the line, best in the world right now. A bit quick, because the one for the football boots, that competition runs out 1 hour before the kickoff of the Melbourne Derby, so get onto that right now. But the one for the futsal boots will go on for about another week. But jump on the site, all the details are there, and look, it's an amazing competition, and I'm just jealous that I can't enter, because I want those boots.
So do I. We are out of time, but we would like all of you to take care of yourselves. Enjoy the football over the weekend. Christian, once again, thanks for joining me, mate. And I'll just assume that you said thanks a lot through the wonders of the microphones and the telephones. Thanks to Mr. Edison for inventing said telephones. And thanks from me, Jack Quigley, for everyone for listening. We'll see you next week on the Football Sack Friday Show.